Okay, so I'm Wendy. I'm Wendy, a grateful, grateful recovering seed addict.
Hi, Wendy.
So I wrote some things this morning because it was a few things I wanted to be sure to say. One thing is, whatever I share today is my story and my recovery. It doesn't have to be yours. Take what you like and leave the rest. It's one of the wonderful things I've learned in this program. My hope is that there will be some nuggets of information that you may take away that maybe you'll think about or look into. But if not, just enjoy yourself. I want to stress that I am so not perfect. I am so not special or extraordinary. I'm not that different from anyone else on the call in this room. So the fact that I have 23 and a half years of abstinence is, it just is. You'll hear that I've been in program for a long time, and it took me about 13 years to get long-term abstinence. Down south, there's many, many, many more people with long-term abstinence. So I just want to stress that, because sometimes we think that, oh, I could never do that because I don't have the secret. There's no secret. The keys to the kingdom are yours, and I believe that's one of the stories in here. So I came into OA, my first meeting, in 1982. I'm not even going to figure out how long ago that was, 38 years, in Homer, Alaska, which is a small town. Two other women were there. And I say this because I want to emphasize that all it takes for a meeting is one other person. You can recover. And nowadays, there's so many online and, you know, telephone meetings and that sort of thing. Luckily for me, one of the women was an AA crossover who'd lost over 100 pounds in OA. She started me on the steps. I did not have a food plan. I am not sure why. However, in retrospect, I'm sure that that contributed to my inability, not having a food plan, contributed to my inability to stay abstinent. In other words, we didn't even talk about food. It's kind of up to me. And obviously, I didn't know what the hell to do with food. I mean, I didn't know how to eat normally. I knew how to binge, overeat. And I knew how to fast and eat like a bird. I had the master of bird eating down. You know, it's like a flake of tuna and a lettuce leaf for lunch and a grapefruit for dinner, you know. I had that master. But that doesn't last long. All of our stories are going to be different, yet all of our stories are the same in many ways. I believe that my compulsive overeating is an addiction for many reasons. My brain is wired differently than a non-compulsive overeater. If I'm out for dinner with a couple, another couple, and they order dessert, and I don't, obviously, and one of them eats a couple bites of their dessert and then pushes it away, and it's sitting there on the table, and they say, oh, that's too rich, or I've had enough. First of all, I think they're fucking crazy. Secondly, all I can think about is that leftover dessert on the table. That's it. And I knew that I was different than other people before I came to OA, but I was horribly, horribly ashamed of it. I knew that I couldn't eat one or two of anything, that it was always the bag. And then you know how it is when you eat the whole bag, and then you have to hide the wrappers, and then you have to go and get a new bag and eat it just to the point of what it was before in the whatever freezer or fridge, so that nobody knew that I did that. I did ridiculous, insane. I love step two about being restored to sanity, because I was definitely insane. Sometimes I would drive through the drive-through window, and seriously, I would order as though I had a family, straight-faced. Well, Susie wants a blah, 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 and Joe and Joe wants a blah, 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 and I would drive away with enough food for five people. I don't know if they knew it or not. I didn't care. I would go to our 24-hour store sometimes at 2 a.m., and I literally would pretend like I had a baby at home that needed something. And so in and amongst my junk food and my binge foods would be like some formula and a little package of diapers, because I didn't want them to, you know. And one night one guy said, oh, you got the munchies, huh? And I was infuriated. It was like, my baby needs formula. I mean, that's insane. That's insane. That's addiction. So I've eaten out of the garbage. I've eaten things that were still frozen. I've eaten things that were too hot and burnt my mouth. I've eaten many things while driving. I even got pulled over once while I was trying to. I went through a stop sign. I didn't take a full stop because I was trying to eat a pizza that was sitting, that was sitting on the seat next to me. I mean, how do you explain that to a cop? You know, I just, another time I got stopped by a cop, I said, this was true. I said that I'd heard my uncle was very ill and I was very upset about it, when really I was trying to eat. And he said, oh, I'm so sorry. Do you want me to follow you home? Make sure you're okay. Hell no. Hell no. So I really could go on and on, and I'm also a substance abuse counselor, and I can give you lots of explanations about the neurology, the neurophysical nature of addiction. And that's why I know that I'm an addict. And here's a quote from our invitation to you. The reasons for the illness are unimportant. What deserves the attention of the compulsive overeater is that there is what? A proven, workable method by which we can recover. So simple. Proven, workable, and it's a method. We don't have to figure it out. We don't have to reinvent the wheel. It's a method. However, it has helped during my recovery. It has helped me to understand why I am the way I am, that I'm wired differently. I also have had a lot of trauma in my past, starting from age 7, including sexual abuse, depression from age 8, substance abuse from age 15, 2 severe natural disasters, which whacked out my brain also. And I do take, and this is full disclosure, I do take medication for some of my neurological issues. None of this recovery, as far as finding out any of this that I just told you, could have happened without OA. Before OA, I was walking around with a messed up brain, binging my face off, trying to hide it from everybody. But being abstinent then allowed me to see these other things about myself and heal them. And heal them. So let me see. I have already told you. I did go through a period of wanting to purge also. I luckily could never succeed in that. Otherwise, I might still be out there. I'm not going to go into all the other things that I did. So what was I looking for in food? I wanted to get stoned. I wanted to get drunk on food. I wanted those substances to take away my pain. And sometimes I wasn't even in that much pain. I would just have been triggered by something. Like driving home in the car with leftovers after a potluck is a huge trigger for me. I should never do that. It's just like an alcoholic walking by a bar or going into a liquor store. I do not belong in certain aisles in the store. I have no business in there, and I have learned that. So I wanted to escape. However, as with any addiction, and especially after coming to OA, they say OA will ruin your eating or your binging. I had shorter and shorter periods of relief from the food until one day I was sitting there eating one of my binge foods and crying. And that scared the shit out of me because it wasn't working anymore. It just wasn't working anymore. So as far as the steps, I got step one. I had no trouble with step one. My life was unmanageable. I was powerless over many, many types of food and the behaviors. I got step two because the power greater than myself was the group. I didn't have a power greater than myself when I came into program. And it took me a long time to get one. It took me a long time. But I saw the power of the group and the steps and the tools. And so I clung to that power. Step three, I didn't get for a really, really, really long time, and I still work on that on a regular basis, but I have come so far. And I would never, ever have the relationship with my higher power that I have now if I wasn't abstinent. I once heard it said that whatever we turn to in our time of stress and trouble is our higher power. And when I would turn to food, that was my higher power. And I could not develop a relationship with a higher power until I put the fork down and turned to my higher power during those times. I also use the other tools in the program. I'm heavy on phone calls because I came into program and that was really big. We didn't have texting and barely had email. So I grew up in program on phone calls. I still love them. But if you're in the room today and you're struggling with step three, it doesn't have to stop you from doing the rest of the steps. I went on and did the rest of the steps. And I still remember my first fourth step, my 4 through 9 work was extremely powerful. Really powerful in reducing shame. And shame is a huge part of my disease. So I'm looking at my notes, guys. Okay. So what is the proven workable method for me? Number one, a food plan. If I don't have a food plan, I'm left alone, and they say an addict alone is in bad company. And if I'm trying to figure out what I'm supposed to be eating, I mean, I do, but I run it by my sponsor. I have to be honest about my food plan. I have to allow my sponsor to give me guidance on everything in my life, and especially my food plan and my weight. I never change my food plan without talking to my sponsor. I weigh once a month. I talk to my sponsor about it, and we discuss if anything needs to be done. So meetings, super important. Phone calls, literature writing. And eventually, step three came around. Abstinence has changed my life 180 degrees. Not only have I lost about 105 pounds and maintained it, I went to college, got a bachelor's degree. I went to work for certain agencies that allowed me to have a healthy retirement, and I just retired a couple weeks ago. I would not be married right now if I weren't abstinent. My financial situation turned around completely. I mean, this is over the years, you know. I'm 60, what am I, 64? And in denial. I still deal with lots of issues. And many days I feel the challenges of life wear me down. This week was an incredibly stressful week. One note is I almost killed my cat by accidentally overdosing her on the medication for going on the plane. She will be going with us and our dog on the plane, and we were to test out some medication with her, and we accidentally gave her too much, and it was a pretty stressful couple days. However, I have a saying, and I still stick by this. If I go to bed abstinent and wake up abstinent, I have a chance to work through whatever issues have come up the day before. I have a chance to grow through these challenges rather than miss my lessons. I always missed my lessons when I turned to the food. I'd be walking along, staying abstinent, and I would come up against a lesson. And I think there's a saying for it in another program, another fucking growth experience is what they might call it. So I would come up against one of those and I would eat. I would exit stage left and go and binge. And every time I got abstinent again, that lesson came up again. I could not escape it. So every time I overate, I lost a valuable opportunity to learn a lesson. It usually hurts to go through these lessons. I don't like them when they come, but for me, the only way out is through. And my capacity to work through challenges has increased triple-fold in the last 23 and a half years. You know, they have a saying that a normal person, when they go out and find a flat tire on their car, they call the AAA Auto Club to come and change the flat tire. A compulsive overeater goes out and finds a flat tire and calls the suicide hotline. And that was me. I had no capacity to deal with anything. None. And that's because I started using substances at a very, very young age, and my brain stopped developing at that age. It was about 14. And a 14-year-old doesn't have a lot of capacity to deal with life. So one message is you do not have to go it alone anymore. I don't know if any of you felt this way, but the first time I walked into that tiny meeting in Homer, Alaska, I had no idea what the frick was, the steps or anything like that. I was not alone anymore. I was not alone. And what a blessing. What a continual blessing. That's why I say grateful recovery for me to have found OA. I was so alone before OA. I was hiding. I was two separate people. I was the fake me, just to face kind of the world, and then the addict me, getting in my car and binging, or going even into the bathroom at work. I spent so much energy hiding and in the addiction. I want to say one more word about relapse prevention, because relapse is common. Relapse is not inevitable. It's possible. Relapse can happen, but it is not inevitable, and there are usually what I call red flags. And that's why it's so important to have a sponsor that you talk to on a regular basis, because Your sponsor will see the red flag. Well, I'm adding this little extra thing, or I'm going to this party, so I think I should be allowed to do such and such. Or I'm going to be traveling, so I don't really know if I can handle my food plan. Insane, insane thinking. So the other thing is the disease lies to us tremendously, and I'm sure if we could do a whole meeting on the lies that the disease tells me. So if you call your sponsor or anyone and says, my disease is telling me that it's going to be okay to blah, 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 then you have killed that line of thinking. It is done. You've called it out. It is over. Don't let those insane thoughts run around in your head. Don't argue with them. Don't play with them. Do not entertain them. That's a red flag. So anyway, thanks for listening. I will close and say thank you so much and just open it up.